Hey there.
Hi, welcome to the show. How about you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Daniel. I'm the head of Equites Studios, and I've been making games for about 3 or 4 years now.
Okay. And what is your studio? What types of games does your studio focus on?
We're focusing on 2D RPGs at the moment.
And for the audience out there, what website can they visit to find out maybe more information about the studio or your current game or something like that?
Our website we're using at the moment is www.equitasstudios.com.
And how do you spell that? Just to make sure that.
Sure, it's EQUITESSTUDIOS.
Great. And okay, so you do 2D RPGs. What inspired you to get into games? I know you said you've been making games for 3 or 4 years. What inspires you to get into it?
What inspired me was I'd just moved to the United States from England, and I was feeling like I wasn't doing enough creatively, and I wasn't learning anything new. And I had the idea to start trying to learn how to make video games, just because it would force me to learn a lot of different kinds of skills: the music, the art, the design, the programming, the language, and would force me into a lot of different areas. And where I had the intention of trying to do everything myself, and the things that came more naturally to me to run with, and things I found harder, I would get help with.
Okay. So you were inspired to get into games. What was the first step then that you took to get into games? Were you just thinking that you're going to develop a game on your own and or yeah, what was the thought process at that point?
Thought process was mainly to just pressure myself creatively to try and do different things. I had when I was coming up with different ideas for games, and I was on the bus one day, and I really felt like playing a Pokemon game. But at the same time, I was kind of in my late 20s, and I felt a little bit embarrassed about it. Because it's, very cutesy, it's aimed at children, that kind of thing, but I really enjoyed the mechanics of it. And so I just kind of started playing with the idea of, okay, so if I were to make like a Pokemon type game where I could pick and choose what features I wanted and which ones I would leave out, what I would add in, and just kind of brainstorming around it like that, I pretty quickly had the beginnings of a game design document, and I felt comfortable enough to try and run with it.
And by running with it, what did you exactly do? Did you post it on a forum? Did you decide, okay, how do I code this? What are your, yeah.
My initial idea was to get like a proper game design document down and kind of outline all the different features I wanted and like the vision of the game. And then I started hunting around online for different free game making software. I spent a good 2 weeks, I think, just downloading and trying out all these different game engines and all these different creation engines to see what was not too hard and not too easy, something that would kind of force me to learn a lot of new things while not kind of being out of my reach, kind of technically.
Were you thinking that this game was going to be for mobile devices at this point, or what were your thoughts?
My original thought was that it would suit very well to mobile devices,
Okay.
just because of the very low graphic intensity of it. I was a little apprehensive because I thought because it would be a Monster Collection type of game, it would have a lot of different sprites and a lot of different animations, even though it was quite low, technically graphics wise. So I didn't know what the finished product would look like in terms of memory space. So I didn't know if the finished product would just be too kind of physically large in terms of memory to put onto a lot of people's mobiles. But that was the kind of aim, to keep it simple, I guess.
So prior to this point, you never did do a game.
Prior to this point, no,
Yeah.
I'd only
So I
played
mean,
games.
what's interesting is that you just jumped right into studying or making the design document and then actually just studying game engines to get it done. I mean, that's pretty I mean, that's pretty inspiring considering that sometimes I've heard other people say, oh, well, I have to first do this, this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this before I can actually get started. What do you feel inspired you to move that fast?
A lot of it is probably naivety, you know. I know
Okay.
I've had a lot of people say, you know, don't try and do an RPG as your first kind of project, and you know, I've even, you know, people on your show I've even heard say that. So a lot of it is kind of my own naivety and kind of thinking, oh yeah, I'll just do that and that'll be fine, and I'll get it done in like 6 months, and you know, I'm sure it's so a lot of it is, you know, which is which does allow me to do a lot of things that I might otherwise shy away from, so I don't mind being a little naive now and then. But also, I mean, my day job is I'm a teacher. I teach elementary school, so you know, my general philosophy around learning new things is that there's nothing you can't do as long as you're willing to put the time and effort into it.
Okay. And even prior to this, you didn't do any programming either. Is that if I'm understanding correctly or?
Prior to that, no, I
Okay.
did try and teach myself HTML. Kind of alongside working on the game, so I was trying to, you know, learn how to program a basic website and that kind of thing. So the original plan was to use, I ended up settling on the program called Construct 2, which is great for beginners, just kind of getting into the idea of making games. So the original idea was to use Construct 2 to make a very, very basic prototype that I
Okay.
could show off on Kickstarter, and then use money from Kickstarter to kind of make the game in a different engine or in a pure language.
Okay, and you weren't thinking that basically to find a partner at that point or anything else like that. You were going to do it independently or individually.
At that time, yeah, my thought process was I would do as much as I could myself, or as much as I had to myself, and then depending on how much money I raised from the Kickstarter, I would get freelancers to help me out with bits and pieces.
Okay. And so let's go back to when you spent those 2 weeks exploring all different types of game engines to
Sure.
make your game. Were you mainly looking at game engines that would work on mobile or did were you that selective at that point?
I was looking for engines that were kind of very geared towards 2D gameplay, so I guess
Okay.
mobile is kind of a indirect offshoot of that, but also engines that had kind of a learning curve that suited my level of experience, so not too hard, not too easy. So I tried Unity at one point, because I know there are plugins and so on you can get for Unity that make it more of a 2D based engine, and that was, I mean, it was a great learning experience, but it was just kind of at the edge of my abilities at that time. You know, I would change one little setting or untick one little box, and it would completely change the whole project. And I would spend an hour trying to retrace my steps, trying to figure out what I had done. And I thought, I don't quite have the time to devote to that every time I'm doing something. But the other thing was like the community around it. So whenever I found an engine, I would also kind of seek out the forums for that engine, see what the community was like, how much they helped each other, what the general attitude was like, tutorial availability, that kind of thing.
And what other engines did you check out then?
I checked out GameMaker. That was all right. I checked out RPG Maker 2, free version of that, just to see how that handled.
What about Corona? Did you check out Corona or?
No, I didn't try
Oh
Corona
wow.
actually. Oh.
'Cause that seemed like perfect for it's a really easy tool for mobile.
Okay.
But okay, so that's interesting. And then out of all those engines, you decided to go with Construct 2D.
I did, yeah.
And what inspired you to do that?
Construct really struck me as having like a great community, like very, very active forums where people were constantly like helping each other out, kind of pushing each other, that kind of thing. That was really good. It doesn't use programming language. You can put code into it, but it so I it didn't require me to learn any coding, but it did require me to learn like the logic of programming. So the fact that events occur like top to bottom, one at a time in sequence. And so if something's conflicting, sometimes all you have to do is change the order of the events. And a lot of kind of the philosophical and logical things about programming without the actual language of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But what about the how much was the cost to use something like Construct? Because I know some of these have like differing rules for I guess the cost or even the royalties that you might have to pay.
So Construct 2, you can get a personal version for free. I mean, you can get like there's a free version which kind of limits the amount of different assets you can put into it and kind of limits various things. You can do everything, but it limits the number of things you can possibly have of each thing. Okay. But you can buy a personal license for $130, sometimes less, because they put it on sale now and then. And there's a business license that's the business license for $430. Again, sometimes it goes on sale for lower than that. The only difference between the personal license and the business license is how much money you're allowed to make from something you export from it.
Okay. So you decide on Construct 2D. What was the next step?
I just started hassling everyone I could find online with my concept for the game. Okay. I didn't want to be too precious about my idea. Firstly, because I didn't think it was super original anyway, but also because the more I would speak to people about it, the more I would hassle people about it and ask for advice about it. It was kind of checking myself as to whether it was a good idea or not, if I was going in the right direction or not, if, you know, there are things I hadn't considered. So getting as much feedback as possible as I could on the general concept of it. Okay. And then it was just diving in, trying to make a prototype in Construct 2.
What was the feedback from people in these, like, what forums did you check out and what was the feedback?
GameDev.net was a great place to like just pitch and just chat about different aspects of the game. The Construct 2 website itself was a great resource. I live in San Francisco, and at the time I had a job in like a clothing store.
Okay.
Huge clothing store with about 300 employees, like a big flagship store. And like 90% of the other employees were like, you know, college students, half of them were in art school or some technical thing, and San Francisco's, you know, very very techie place as well.
Yeah.
So there were also a lot of people in person I could talk to about the idea. You know, there are a lot of nerds in the city and where I was working, the kind of people I was meeting. So, and the general feedback was people really liked the concept, as far as I could tell. People really, really liked the concept, and I'm quite a nice person and a friendly person, so, you know, I'm sure some of them just said it because, you know, they just wanted to, you know, make me feel good. But a lot of people ended up helping me out with it for little to no money, and that to me was a sign that, oh, I'm onto something here. Like, you know, so if people are willing to devote their own time and talent and effort to helping me with it, there must be something in there that they're seeing that I am too, hopefully.
When you say helping out, like, what do you exactly mean? Is that just giving you feedback? Is it actually doing artwork or programming, or what are your thoughts?
So most of it was artwork originally. At one point I had three or four or five very talented concept artists working with me on the characters, the kind of scenery, the cultures of the game that I had kind of outlined, the monsters. You know, I had some beautiful artwork that you can check out on the Kickstarter page. We had a Kickstarter in 2013.
Yeah.
So if your listeners were to Google Necromancer, The Fight for Life, that can lead you to a Kickstarter page to show you what it looked like back then, which was like 90% concept art because it was quite early in the process. I also had a couple of people composing music for the game for no money, which is beautiful. Came out with some really good stuff for that. I had someone doing voiceover work for like a kind of a promo thing, like, you know, in a world con, you know, one of those kind of cinematic-y things. I was trying to attack it from as many different angles as possible.
Did you have a timeline for how long you thought it would take to actually get something out? Because I know that from my experience, once you get other people involved, you got to feel like you're making progress continuously, like, you know, like forward movement no matter what. And if you don't do that necessarily, you kind of lose momentum. That can kind of just slow down things. So I don't know if you ran into that, or if there was already an expectancy that this might take a few years to create.
I was just completely guessing. I thought, you know, maybe a year, maybe, but it was a lot of it depended on the success of the Kickstarter and if we went into kind of stretch goals, that kind of thing. If the Kickstarter failed, I knew it would just, I would still work on it. It would just be like a little passion project of mine, a hobby, and then it would just take as long as it took, basically.
Okay. So you're getting concept art, you're getting this work done. Around that time, did you think about putting it on Kickstarter, or what? When did you get inspired to do that?
It's interesting. Having a Kickstarter was almost central to the project. Like having a Kickstarter was almost a project in itself, which is a lot of what I hear now talking to other people who've done it. So, you know, making and managing a Kickstarter is like a whole project within itself. Which you have to devote that kind of time and effort to. So that was almost, I don't know, that was also like, it didn't feel like the Kickstarter was necessary to make the game. The Kickstarter was like an extra fun thing to do, which helped make it feel a little bit less like work and more about I could tell there was, like I said, this was back in like 2012 2013, and I could tell there was a bubble, you know what I mean? There were these projects going on there with like no video and making thousands of dollars. There were those games getting millions of dollars, which a couple still do now, but not in the volumes they were back in 2013.
Yeah, you're right. It was really hot then.
And I don't know why, but I could just tell that it was like a bubble and that it wasn't going to last forever. And I just thought I could wait another year or so until I've got something really nice to show that, you know, could really get people's, you know, motivated to, you know, donate and that kind of thing. Or I could just release what we have now, even though it's super early and it's kind of ugly and it's mainly trying to work off the back of the concept art. But if I do it now, I would just hopefully get some of this buzz that's happening around Kickstarter itself.
Yeah.
And so it was super early. We had a goal of about $18,000, which I kind of put together as a way of trying to, that was mainly focused on hiring artists to do most of the pixel art for the game. And we ended up making about $3,000, which I was super proud with. You know, everyone did a great job with that, and I was really proud of what we were able to achieve. But it was definitely a really good learning experience.
And those Kickstarters last about 30 days, if I understand correctly, or?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I mean, you can set as many days as you want, up to 50, I think.
Okay. And so what? So you said 18,000. Once you got 3,000, what were your thoughts at that point? And what was the thought of the people helping you out? Did it help morale? Did it lower morale? Were people just indifferent?
I think I was very honest with like the people that were helping me. It's weird. I want to call them a team, but because they weren't on payroll, but like the kind of the people that had helped me out with it and people that were working for me and who I paid to help me. I was very, very honest with them, and I was like, look, this, you know, I'm putting it up there because there's a lot of hype around Kickstarter itself at the moment. I've not got super high hopes, and what we have is really, really, really early. So, you know, it's a big gamble as to whether people will kind of get the concept of it the way that you and I do. So, you know, we went in with very reasonable expectations, I think.
Okay. And so after the Kickstarter, what did you decide to do after that? Or like, what was the progress?
So after the Kickstarter, because of course the way the Kickstarter works is that if you don't meet your goal, you get no money.
Yeah.
So after the Kickstarter, I did fall into a bit of a slump for a couple of months. I did kind of get kind of a bit of an emotional hit from it more than I thought I would, and I did have a lot of trouble motivating myself to kind of push on with it. And I
that's kind of interesting because I feel like some people get into that. You had low expectations going into it anyways, and yet it still affected you.
Oh yeah, I mean I'm quite a soft person in general. I do let things affect, I do let things hit me pretty hard if, job interviews and this and, competitions and that kind of thing. I do, take a reasonable hit from them when things don't go as well as I hope. But what really helped me out was remembering how, willing people were to help me with it and just remembering that and that other people were, inspired by my my inane ramblings about this fictional world inspired people to, help me for little to no money, and that really kind of helped pick me up. And also, my friend, whose name is Corbin, he did the video for the Kickstarter.
Okay.
Like, he shot it and edited it and kind of set it up as almost like a faux interview thing with me in a chair and he did an amazing job. He's an art student. He's happened to specialize in concept art. And he did an amazing job with the video. The video is by far the best part of the whole Kickstarter. It was the best part of the whole project at that point.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, I have very little to offer you for all this effort and time and energy you've put into it, but I really want to make this happen, even if it's just as like a passion project, but I would love for you to come in on this with me and kind of be my partner on it, and if anything comes of it, well, I'll split it 50-50 with you.
Wow.
If you're willing to keep putting even half as much passion in it as you have been so far. And he was more than happy to jump in on that, and so I've been working with Corbin ever since.
When did you make that offer? Was it right after the Kickstarter, or?
It was probably about a month after the Kickstarter. Yeah,
okay.
It was. I kind of needed it myself. I needed someone to be kind of in my corner and helping me out and prodding me when, if I did have like a wavering of kind of motivation to, or if, if I was doubting myself, that kind of thing. Corbin's amazing at like going, no, listen to me, kind of this, you're fine. Just do what you think's best. Do what I think is best. So he's been a great partner in that. He's been totally invaluable.
Would you say that having a partner has been significant in terms of, I guess, impact on the project or just the results of where you're at right now? What are your thoughts on that? Like, because when we talk about indie game development, some people think it's solo game development.
Uh-huh.
And, the question is what is the best approach? Is it to go solo or is it beneficial to have a partner?
I think it's great to have a partner if your roles are very, very clearly defined.
Yeah.
If one person is making, if one person is making the game and the other person is focused on the marketing and the kind of advertisement and the crowdsourcing, as long as your roles are very clearly defined, I think having a partner is fantastic. So I'm handling the majority of the project, but Corbin is completely the art side of things. So he's working with the concept artists and the pixel artists, and the visuals are completely his area, and I leave him alone to that. Whereas I feel like if there were two people working on a project and both of them were trying to do everything, I could imagine, that being a lot more of a complicated setup and constantly trying not to step on each other's toes and trying to have a vote on things when there's two people. I can imagine being very difficult, sure. But if you have very clearly defined roles and jobs, I think there's no reason it can't be an amazing experience, sure.
Yeah. And I guess, you put out something early on Kickstarter. Did you think about maybe putting something out early on iOS or Android? Because at that time also, there was a lot of hype around mobile games and mobile apps too.
Sorry, do you mean releasing something on iOS and Android at the same time as having the Kickstarter?
Well, yeah, not even that, or even right after, just to get feedback, right? I mean, as just part of maybe developing the game kind of with the community? I know you talked about getting feedback and getting input from other people in person, and releasing something on these app stores might give you a chance to, first of all, refine your game, just understand like the whole process, but also just get more feedback from people outside of the people that you meet with constantly in person.
I considered it, but I think a lot of the I received a lot of warnings from people about I'm very open to kind of talking about the project and showing all these kind of early ugly screenshots and things with other indie game developers, other indie game developers, but I think it might be a lot of, I had a lot of warnings that it might be more damaging to release something at that stage to like a
Yeah, that's
buying
true.
public, just because with the Kickstarter as well, the people were trying, I had a lot of advice about what would be wise to put on the Kickstarter page and what would be wise to leave off because something very early and ugly could detract from the appeal, even though it shows some level of achievement. Does that make sense? It's a very interesting
Yeah,
balance, and I don't
no,
think
I.
there's a right answer to it, but I was struggling with that decision with almost every little sprite, or like every little feature. I was like, do I want to show this feature because it shows that I, it gives me a little more competence. It shows that I can do something. It shows that I've achieved something. Or do I want to leave this off of the Kickstarter page because it looks so early and ugly that it might turn people off? And that's a really, really awkward balance to try and make decisions around.
Well, were you also concerned that maybe some other developers might come up or release something similar and put it on the App Store before you?
For some reason, that was never a concern of mine. Partly because I don't think my idea is super original. It's just kind of it's a mush of two or three existing ideas. There's not like a real core original component to it that I should be kind of precious around. But also because, again, because of my naivety, I chose something that was quite grand in scope, and I don't think. I think the majority of indie developers look at it and go, "Whoa, that's a lot of work. I'm just going to try and make a Flappy Bird clone if I'm going to rip someone off. I'm not going to spend months and months and months trying to
Well,
rip off this RPG."
what do you think of that approach where you just release a super simple game just to get something out there, just to see how people respond, versus spending years on a game and not necessarily getting feedback? And I mean, there are two approaches, and I've on this show I've seen people in both camps. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if the projects I'm working on now completely tanks, then releasing short, simple, snappy games that just revolve around one feature and just churning out smaller projects, I could totally see myself doing that. I'm a teacher, so I could knock out a couple over the summer, that kind of thing. But I don't know whether I would enjoy it as much. That's the thing. At the moment, this is just like a hobby, like a passion thing. So if I if I, it would depend on how much fun I found it, I guess, if I'm not doing it for profit.
Did you think about also just turning your RPG into episodic content? So maybe you would release something small at first, but then over time you might release another episode that expands the world or something else like that? Or do you want it all done up front?
I might end up releasing it as three episodes, almost like a trilogy. But the features are almost complete now, to be honest. The feet like the actual features of the game are pretty much complete at this stage. So going forward, it's mainly just sourcing pixel art, getting as many assets as possible into the game as I can. So that might be something that occurs. It depends on who I end up working with on the pixel art and the assets, because some people I'm working with at the moment are just making assets for me for free. And they're just, you know, I've given them a list of all the monsters in the game, all the different factions in the game, all the different kind of cultures and buildings and that kind of thing. And they're just doing what they like. They, you know, they're picking and choosing. Oh, this sounds fun to make. Wonder God makes that kind of thing, which is wonderful. You know, which is great. It's kind of their end of the deal of it that they're just getting to practice and it's just doing something they enjoy. But that would kind of mess up the episodic part of it because X amount of things late game would be finished and X amount of things early game would be finished and so on and so on. Where it's only if I were to devote a lot more money to that side of things that I could be more kind of project managery about it and go, no, we need this asset by this date to be able to release this chunk of the game and then onwards and such.
Okay. And going back to when you started the partnership part, at that point, I guess, did the workflow happen differently? Or, because that was in 2013, and it's 2015 now. So what, how did that partnership go for the last couple of years?
It's been good because it's taken a lot of the... It's really, really nice to not have to worry so much about the visual aspect of it.
Yeah.
I can go to Corbin and I can say, look, when the player enters this town, I want them to feel this. I want the mood to be like this. I want it to be a bit like, you know, Game of Thrones, but with a touch of, you know, Attack on Titan, with a bit of, you know, and I want this kind of philosophy to this kind of culture. And he can go, oh yeah, I know what you mean. And just like, you know, take care of it pretty much. Which is what, you know, he's incredibly talented and I love him for it. And he can speak the language of artists. So, whereas I might say, you know, if a pixel artist were to produce something and I look at it, it might not be quite what I'm looking for, but I wouldn't know how to tell them that. Whereas, you know, Corbin knows what hue means. And you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, he's much, much better at kind of getting to the crux of what the visuals need and communicating with artists and that kind of thing. So it's left me a lot more free to work on things like the story and the mechanics and the writing of the game.
So, I mean, can you talk about how the workflow happens then, I guess, on a weekly or monthly basis now that you do have, like, a partner working with you?
Kind of the way it works at the moment is every month we get together, or we get together more than once a month, but at least once a month we sit down and we make a list of things we want to accomplish over the next month and a list of things we want to accomplish by the time we launch the next Kickstarter. And we just kind of talk about which ones are higher priority, which ones we need money and which ones we can do for free, and kind of try and strategize about which ones to do first and how to devote resources. And then just by next month, the list will be shorter and we'll feel good about ourselves and it will kind of narrow down the different things we need to do.
Okay. And when you meet up, is it online or in person?
Oh, it's in person.
Do you have is it like a work session too, or is it mainly just communicating on kind of the work that's going to have to be done for this upcoming month? Do you also, like... Part of the benefit of having a partner sometimes just working just in the same vicinity or area can, you know, it can lead to serendipity or other things. And I wasn't sure if that's something that you guys try to aim to do, or do you just do your work separately and come together for kind of decision making or strategy?
I know what you mean. I get way more work done if I'm in the presence of someone who's working on something too, even if it's completely vastly different. Yeah. I recognized that kind of synergy when we were working together towards the first Kickstarter, and because I noticed that energy and how much more motivated I was around him and kind of the way we fed off each other's ideas, that kind of thing. That's one of the reasons I asked him to kind of be a permanent fixture on this with me, because I recognized how valuable that was. But normally it's a very short period that we'll kind of do a quick kind of brainstorm of what needs to happen short term and long term, and then it will be a work session, normally working on separate things. So I'll be kind of adding new features and fixing bugs, and he'll be kind of brainstorming different monsters and ideas, or talking to artists and kind of doing quick sketches of my ramblings, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
And you know, you mentioned synergy. How do you keep that synergy going when you can't necessarily meet every day or every other day or something else like that?
I mean, we do bug each other a lot on you know, text and Facebook and that kind of thing. But I think the core of it is that we just really, really trust each other. Like I don't really second guess him. I don't worry about him. I trust his creativity. Again, part of it is having very clearly defined job roles and things that aren't super my business. But I think a lot of it's trust. You know, I and that was one of the great things about working with people on the first Kickstarter. You know, people were making music for me in different forms of art and that kind of thing. Here's what I want the game to feel like, and here's what the game is about philosophically, and here's what, you know, kind of, here's the vague story arc of the game. You do whatever feels kind of, you create whatever comes to you out of that, you know. And I gave people a lot of freedom with what they did with that. And some of the results I got back were amazing. So, you know, this whole time I've felt very validated by kind of being very hands off and trusting with people, because some of the things that have come out of it have been amazing.
Okay. And so what's the status now of the project? And just moving forward, what are you doing anything differently? Have you changed your process any since, you know, the partnership first started?
I'm thinking about it a lot more realistically now, just because of the experiences I've had and the amount I've learned. Yeah. Going forward, we're planning on having another Kickstarter a little bit later this year.
Okay. And what do you think about Kickstarter now? Because it seems like it's died down a little.
Yeah, it's a very different, ecosystem now.
So in a way, you were right on the approach of just getting stuff out there when, like, timing was more important than polish.
At the time, yeah. It was a 50-50, but I had nothing to lose by trying, I guess. Yeah. So I just wanted, yeah. Early on, I knew the project was way too early to kind of be asking for support and donations. But I thought, if I can just piggyback off some of this hype, then we could, you know, maybe something special could happen. So this time, so the state of the project is now I'm making the project, I'm making the game, in terms of features and engine, I'm making the game kind of completely, and it's almost finished, which is great, kind of in terms of features and that kind of thing. It's practically finished. So right now I'm working with pixel artists to try and get as many great looking assets on top of the bones as possible. So now the philosophy is more, I want to be able to get a working prototype out that I'm happy for people to even play and test, because we're a studio that hasn't got any history of making successful projects. It's way more important now than ever to show, you know, look, we're basically done. It's just about volume now.
Now that you're almost done, have you contacted some of the maybe previous artists or musicians that did help you and give them an update, or how does that work? Or
yeah, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people that have been involved beforehand. They're still surprised that I'm working on it. I think awesome. they're impressed that I'm still working on it, which is nice. Some of them I've asked them to come back and do some more bits with me. If you go to the Kickstarter page, the main splash image is of this beautiful monster concept for a banshee done by an artist called Marek Jarocki, which I might give you his link to his gallery for the website after.
Okay.
But I've recently got in contact back with him because I was so blown away by the stuff he created, and now we're working together on a comic book, like a short 15-page comic book that'll tie in with the video game world.
Oh, cool.
It's like a little extra kind of world building thing, you know, like almost like a side story set in the same world as the video game. Just like possibly, you know, most probably it'll end up being like a Kickstarter award for like a high-end backer, but also we'll kind of hopefully get another community of people interested in the project as a whole. But, you know, I feel like the more people you work with on this project, you know, I didn't need five different concept artists on board, but I felt like the more people I worked with, you know, if they tell all their friends about it, that's another 20 to 50 people that know about the project that wouldn't have done otherwise. So I feel like it's in, you know, people are doing this alone or in very small teams. It's almost invaluable to work with as many freelancers and friends and people as possible, just because that kind of exponentially grows the community of people that will find out about the project once you hit go on the Kickstarter, you know?
Okay. And this Kickstarter, when do you expect to post it, and what are your goals for this one?
So my goals for this one are to raise enough money to be able to completely furnish the artwork for the game, and then I will take care of everything else. I'll take care of the bugs and testing, programming, even the sound and the music, and so basically completely offload the arts and the assets to somebody else. That's the overall goal for the Kickstarter. And basically I'm trying to learn from the first Kickstarter that I should do this one when it's ready, if you know what I mean. Basically, I would love to be able to do it by the end of the summer, so kind of mid-August, be able to hit go on that. But a lot of it just depends on how and when the assets and pixel art that I've already commissioned comes in. Just so I can, you know, I'd love to be able to give it to people on Twitch to play, and I'd love to give it to people on, you know, people who make YouTube Let's Play videos, that kind of thing. I'd love to be able to give it to as many people as possible to try out and play as a demo. So I'm happy to wait for the game to be in a state where I'm proud to give it to somebody to do that. So there's not an awful rush on it. So there's not like a solid kind of this is when I want this done by, because there's so many people helping me on it, and there's so many people helping me out of the goodness of their hearts that there isn't. There are certain people I can't push to be like, can you speed this up a bit for me, please?
Do you know how much you're expecting to raise this time? Or
I'm going to set a goal at 18,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which I've kind of gingerly calculated with a lot of different pixel artists I've been chatting to as enough to produce pixel art for the game to like a good standard to where I, you know, where I'd be happy to release it as a product on Steam for say $5 or something like that. Anything we go above that would just then improve the quality of the pixel art, basically.
Okay. And let's talk about the marketing. I mean, you kind of alluded to it with the comic books and Twitch and YouTube. And what approaches are, I mean, now that you said it's almost done, what approaches or what things are you doing to promote your game?
A lot of it is still in the kind of indie game community, so a lot of it is still just, you know, keeping up appearances, being part of the forums, different. Pretty soon I'm going to start releasing tutorials for Construct 2, because I haven't seen it being used for the type of game I'm making. I haven't seen any kind of projects being, you know, being made with Construct 2 that are quite like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I want to release tutorials, possibly video as well as written ones, to help people, you know, help kind of lure people that way. I'm I'm probably going quite wide with scope here, but you know, I want to try and get this comic book produced. As well, I've made a card game, like a trading card game, using the same basic rules as the video game, in the same way that kind of Pokemon cards are a kind of a faux Pokemon video game. That was quite simple to do because it's based on almost exactly the same rules as the video game. I'm also writing the story of the game as a novel.
Okay.
So I'm trying to attack it as many different directions as possible, basically.
Are you going to release the story and the comic book like on a Kindle, like Amazon bookstore, or what are your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, that'll definitely be an ebook. That'll definitely be copies, unless I might have like little Indiegogo campaigns for those or something, just to try and get a handful out in print. But yeah, just because of the low production costs, they will be kind of electronic products. Okay.
And will you probably make them free, or are you going to charge for those?
I'll charge them, but I will definitely undervalue them.
Okay.
Like I'll kind of price them. I'll price them very low, like $1 or $2, something like that, just because they are mainly promotional material. But I feel like giving something away for free almost undervalues it.
Possibly. Yeah, no, that's true. They might not take it seriously. Mm. Well, that's interesting. What are your thoughts on these other things? I mean, what about YouTube? I know you mentioned Let's Play videos and Twitch. Have you already started reaching out to some of the people on there?
Not yet. I follow a lot of them, but I know they're super busy, and you know, there's a lot of AAA stuff coming out this summer, so yeah. I'm almost a little bit too polite. I don't want to kind of bother them before I've got something that I'm actually ready to show them, because otherwise they're just going to forget about me, if you know what I mean. They have enough, especially the big players, and you know, probably get hundreds of requests every week.
Are you going to try
like me to play their games?
I mean, I think I had someone that I interviewed recently, a few interviews ago, about just trying to reach the smaller people on YouTube and just kind of building it from there. I mean, is that an approach you've considered, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first time I considered that was hearing somebody else on your podcast talk about it. So that's definitely an avenue I'm going to try and work with. It's tough. It's one of those. It's almost like we were saying earlier with the first Kickstarter. Although I'm very proud of every little milestone we hit with the project, like, you know, getting the combat tie and getting this tie and getting the bugs out of that guy. It's very delicate to know when to, you know, okay, should I put this out for the world to see now so that they take me seriously and they see that I can create something? Or is it still too early and it still doesn't look quite the way I want it to, and will people, you know, not really like it because, you know, the art's not quite there yet? You know, so it's very, and Corbin's great at kind of grounding me about that kind of thing. But decisions around, you know, when is it too early, it's very, very difficult.
And are you still going to target mobile? I mean, I think you mentioned Steam, so I wasn't sure if you're going to try a new approach or a different approach.
I want to target Steam just because it's so easy to get a game on Steam now. I think.
I wasn't sure, because I mean, I hear it's still kind of hard. You have to get approved or something.
Yeah, there's a green light process, but you know, it's almost free. There's no negative. You know, there's nothing to lose. I'll put it that way. Whereas. So I'm going to target Steam. I'm going to start target mobile platforms. I've also been looking into getting a Nintendo development kit.
Oh yeah,
I think they go for about $1,000, something like that. But you just have to get approval from Nintendo, because I feel like if you know, given permission, I think it could work very well on, you know, on the Nintendo eShop.
Yeah,
people could play it on the Wii U kind of little handheld, almost, you know, the tablet controller that guy has, but also, you know, the Nintendo DS, possibly, that kind of thing. This is a possible avenue.
Well, does Construct allow for all these different platforms? It's not something I'm familiar with, so I don't know. I mean, that's That's amazing if you can easily deploy to these platforms.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about Construct is it can export very quickly to a lot of different platforms. And to export to, and I was amazed, you know, quite recently, you can export to Nintendo if you have the development kit and kind of have it plugged in at the same time. I haven't tried it yet, but the option is there and it's grayed out. Okay. So it's there, but you know, you have to have the development kit kind of ready to go to actually physically be able to do it from Construct.
So you expect to have the game out probably then in the fall of 2015.
I expect to have a demo out. I expect to have a demo that YouTubers can play and people on Twitch can play, and that I can put as like a full nice video on Kickstarter that I'm proud of and can say, look, these are all the features that are going to be in the game. It's practically finished. All we want to do is, you know, have more towns, more dungeons, more monsters, and that's what you'll be contributing for.
When I think of Twitch, I think of like hardcore games. Are like 2D RPGs something that you've seen on Twitch, or what do you think of in terms of Twitch? Like,
I haven't seen them yet. I was just considering it as like another possible avenue for people doing little kind of let's play videos and reviews. I don't actually know for a fact if Twitch is used for, you know, reviewing games, to be honest. I just assumed that it was a possible avenue.
Do you have like a YouTube channel or a blog that you use to, I guess, just even talk about updates to your project that might galvanize the community? Or
So at the moment, if people go to the website I mentioned at the beginning of the show, equitastudios.com, there's a kind of a short form blog there, which is just kind of small little snippet updates. If people go to necromancergame.blogspot.com, then that's where I write kind of more lengthy, kind of almost rambling kind of updates or little advancements I've made, that kind of thing. So like so on the website itself, I might say, oh, you know, we got the touch controls working, yay, you know. And but on the blog spot, I might kind of go into it a bit deeper and, you know, post more screenshots, and it's more transparent, I guess, more personal.
And I've heard of some developers actually doing kind of code sessions that they put on YouTube or Twitch. Is that something you've considered too? Or like, you know, dev answers, like, or ask the dev or something, and they kind of do these sessions where people can just randomly come in and ask you questions.
I would love to be able to do that, just because I enjoy the sound of my own voice, and I love, you know, sounding like I know what I'm talking about. I just don't think anyone would be super interested at this stage of the game. You know, maybe I could have something like that up at the same time as the Kickstarter and try and
Well, because I've seen some games where they've just turned a development process into part of the entertainment for the game. And, you know, they could be spending a year or two just on development, but because they're giving updates constantly and just talking about it, whatever, it's entertainment for the people that finally do buy the product. The name of this, that there's one developer studio that I definitely know did that, where they actually sold pre-orders for a game that was never really released, and it took them like 2 or 3 years to release it. But during that time, they were talking about, you know, they were giving updates and just talking about stuff and just making the whole process more entertaining. And so I wasn't sure if that was an approach you were going to take or something you consider too.
Sure. I think I tried that early on with the kind of personal blog as more like
I think it was called Wolfire Studios or something like that. They're the ones who kind of did something like that. So.
Okay. I'll check that. Now that the school year is over, I'll definitely have more time for that kind of thing and more kind of community outreach. I think if I did something like that, because I'm still kind of relatively an amateur game developer, I think that I wouldn't have much to offer in a technical sense. It would just be more kind of like, because, you know, this is how you manage a project when you kind of hardly know what you're doing, and, you know, this is how to be nice to people, and this is what artists expect, you know, if you're asking them to help you, you know, kind of more of the project overview kind of stuff more than the kind of technical expertise I'd be able to offer, and it would just depend if that was something people would find interesting or entertaining, I guess.
And since you're in San Francisco, a lot of other indie game developers seem to be there. Do you go to any of those gatherings or meetups? Or?
Yeah, I've been to a few meetups. They were really great, actually. You know, okay. People are generally very friendly. You know, any opportunity I have to talk about what I'm working on gives me kind of an extra little energy boost, because I'm like, oh yeah, and then this is going to happen, and it kind of re-energizes me, which is great. Yeah. But I genuinely love meeting people and talking to them about what they're passionate about. You know, again, a lot of the initial kind of kick of this was the fact that I was moving to a new country and that I didn't really have any friends. And so, you know, as well as kind of the making sure I didn't turn into a troglodyte and didn't do anything productive with my time, you know, making me do something creative, it was also a way of making it so that I had something to talk about with people and something that I, you know, had an excuse to connect with people about. And so, yeah, so, you know, I loved it just for the kind of, you know, community stuff and meeting new people. But, you know, it's, as far as I've found, it's also a very just genuinely nice community online and offline. And people are just very ready to listen to what you have to say and talk about your ideas and, you know, spend 5 minutes to however long, you know, helping you. It's great.
And what would you say are the top three lessons that you could share with other indie game developers in terms of what you wish you would have done differently? Or what you wish you would have known when you first started this project?
I guess the main thing I try to keep in mind is just to be nice to people. You know, people are incredibly talented. Everyone has something they're good at. And if you're asking somebody to help you, you know, just the very least you can do is just be nice to them, be polite, be patient, you know. You don't have to be their friend even, but they deserve respect and they deserve, you know, appreciation for who they are and what they do. And people will come back to you. You know, I'm by no means the most, you know, like I've said, I'm by no means the most technically adept person at this, but people are willing to work with me on this project partly because sometimes they, you know, really are on board with the concept, but partly because, you know, I think I'm quite a nice person and they just enjoy working with me because I'm easy to get along with, you know, and you can just get a lot of, you can get a lot of life just from that. The second one would be just, try to remember that there's nothing you can't do as long as you're willing to put the time and effort and energy into it. You know, you can learn, you know, I firmly believe that you could learn to do anything.
Yeah.
I had this years and years ago. I had this guitar teacher, and the first lesson I had with him, he said, "You've got a brain and two hands, the same as Bob Marley." Not Bob Marley, Jimi Hendrix. You know, yeah. You got a brain and two hands. That's all Jimi Hendrix did. There's nothing he did that you can't do. And you know, it's kind of very kind of, it really levels the playing field just to remember that. Oh yeah, like I can do anything. So you know, there's nothing to stop me. Especially now with the amount of resources and such there are online.
Yeah.
I guess just be very, third thing would be just very, try to be very honest with yourself about why you're doing something.
Okay.
You know, I've from the outset of this, I've made it very clear to myself and anyone working with me on it that I'm not doing this to make a ton of money. I'm doing it because I find it interesting and it's fun and I like working with people on something creative. And you know, I'm sure this will get complete if it takes 2 years or 10 years, but you know, but reminding myself why I'm doing it is allowing me to give myself that freedom to just take as long as it takes and make mistakes and not put too much pressure on myself and to, you know, maintain good relationships. Whereas if I were doing it for money, then I would probably stop what I'm doing immediately, throw it all in the trash can and try and make the next Flappy Bird, you know? So just being very honest with yourself about why it is you're trying to do what you're trying to do, I guess.
Okay. And I think that's about it. Any other last things you want to, I guess, share with the listeners out there or any suggestions you have for them? who are also maybe potentially looking to get started on their game?
Sure. I would just be, I would, my advice would just be not try to not be too precious about your idea. You know, if you're willing to just be open and honest about what it is you're trying to do, what your vision is, then just put it out there and you'll be amazed at the amount of feedback and people trying to help you. You know, the things people will offer, you know, you'll be very quickly, I think, impressed at. Whereas I think a lot of very, very new developers will come up with an idea and then get very kind of secretive about it, and you know, might go onto forums and say, "Oh, you know, I've got this idea for this game. I don't want to tell you too much about the features of it yet." But you know, and then people are like, "Well, we can't really help you then, if you know, if you're not going to give us anything." Whereas, like, just a month ago, I was on this website, pixeljoint.com, which is like a hangout for pixel artists, and you know, I just put up a post saying, "Oh, you know, I'm looking for." You know, I'm looking to get some assets of this kind of quality, this number of them, this many frames for animation. You know, could you guys give me some kind of rough estimates about, you know, what I could expect to pay for something like that? And someone just private messaged me and said, "Oh, I've got nothing on my plate right now. I don't mind doing some of those for you for free."
Okay, awesome.
You know, and so I'm just getting, you know, free assets out of the goodness of some very talented ass's heart because I was just very transparent and clear about what it was I was trying to do. So.
Cool. And once again, where can listeners find out more information about your game and potentially hear about the Kickstarter and other upcoming news?
So the main website we're communicating from now is www.equitasstudios.com. That's EQUITESSTUDIOS, and that'll be the main kind of hub for Facebook, Twitter, Kickstarter, and all those kind of places. And there's a contact form on there too for anyone who wants to get in touch and just chat about anything or, you know, offer to be part of it.
Okay, cool. Thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been great.
Cool. Take care. Bye.
And you. Bye.